That motion to remove that policy was, you said 2.6?
2.26.
Yeah, 2.26.
So
are you approving the personnel policy manual, section 2 for general policies with the exception of personnel policy 2.26?
It's the very last.
No, I took that one. No, that is the 2.26 is for, like I said, employee recognition program, which is something new to us. So I thought that one probably warranted some space on its own.
And then to your question, yes, ma'am.
The motion on the table is by Steve to approve personnel policy manual section 2 general policies as amended by removing policy PP 2.26. Anyone has seconded? Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. That motion passes. Zoning ordinance 622, which we do also need to pick up on the table, correct?
I think that's probably the table. We did not do the public today for
okay. The
zoning, and that's the public.
Okay, so I'll let Amanda and Bo explain the process that we need to do while we continue to update and revise this.
So with zoning ordinances are different than normal city ordinances, and there are different procedures. Before a first reading can occur, there has to be a public hearing on what essentially is post-final version. And I don't think we're quite there yet.
Right.
And so for that reason, the first reading cannot occur. But discussion could occur if there's other things with that ordinance as presented that you'd like to discuss, provide directions for additional change. But to do that, I should get up and table.
Yeah.
I do have four tabs. So I have four things to throw in the mix. But
I'm motioning to pick up the ordinance 2.6 for zoning.
Yeah, pick up all.
I'll second that.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Okay, so up from the table. So I would like to, let's see, my four notes, I think. We'll start with a different perspective now, or I've learned a little bit going into 153.044 conditional uses.
153, where?
153.044. There's no page number here, so I can't. It's about this far into it.
I got it.
It is conditional uses and structures. Item G, where we had talked about before, isolated accessory structures on additional conditions. Haven't had a little change, a little more education on this, a little feedback from folks in town. I think I would prefer that we strike that.
G?
Yeah.
Yes. You want number?
Strike what is that?
153.044. 153. Item G.
Isolated accessory?
Yes. Based upon probably starting with the discussion last meeting about our definition of lots and lots of records and how that works, as well as some feedback from folks in town and a little bit of history of this, I would like to strike that so that it is not a conditional item to be able to just build a separated dwelling, a separated shop or something like that, away from your lot of record on a vacant lot in town. And the feedback I definitely got from Tom was that, evidently this has been a thing for a number of years, and I guess I'll take the heat. I kind of, you know, trying to work with somebody on a piece of property I thought was probably useful, but as, you know, I said, you can't target one and you have to do it all. And understand that there's a lot of history of that in town going back a number of years, so it's best that we don't do that to other town that I know has it, so.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So there is there's a individual in town that lives in one part of town. They have a piece of property in another separate part of town that is well away from their house, their dwelling. They would like to put up a shop on that lot. It's not allowed by our ordinances currently to do that, because a building like that is called an accessory building. In order to have an accessory, you have to have the primary. So this was a way to kind of help that out on a piece of property that itself didn't look like it probably would work more, and that was probably the best thing for it. Now that it's been cleaned up, for one, I think it's a very good place for a house. And two, there's really been a long history in town here of folks trying to come in and buy properties. Like, we have two of them right now. One of them we've owned for years to do the same thing. And that's probably not where we need to go.
Well, by taking this out, they can't, though.
Right. Now, you have your lot of record. So, where it kind of went with and Bo helped out last month when we really dug down into definitions, our definitions of lots and a lot of record, and then how the county does things with parcels. I was under a different impression that if you had two different parcels, even if they're side by side, our building ordinances probably wouldn't let you do that either. But I think now I've been educated on our definition, and because I'll use mine as an example. I have two different parcels, but I'm side by side. So that parcel thing, your property tax thing, that's just a county deal. Really,
so
good.
You can go across that front line.
Yeah, because it's within my lot of record within the city. But if I was, you know, three blocks away, now I'm no longer within that definition of that zone, and I do have an entirely separate lot. And we use lots. We don't use the parcel thing is for property taxes. That essentially, whereas our definition is lot, because essentially you could do this. If it's approved this way, you basically could come in, buy up a couple of lots in town, you know, or even do it right next to your house and say, here, I'll do this because I can do it. And then all you got to do is go to the courthouse and separate off the parcel anyway. It's irrelevant to us. And then you could just turn around and sell it, and then you'd have the same, which you could probably do anyway, but it just prohibits actually building.
Oh.
You know.
Thank you.
Okay.
If I may, Mayor, just touch on that a little bit further. There likely are several parcels that have built across parcels in town. Corporate recommendation would be if a building permit comes in, an owner that owns two different parcels, they can join those together by a deed of restriction. That is a recording that says this parcel goes with this parcel. If there's two different lots of record, you can tie them together with a deed of restriction if they want to build across two lots. That would be a good recommendation to do that to avoid what you're suggesting as building a house on this parcel, building a garage on this parcel, and then selling off the parcels individually.
But if one has a mortgage on it, the other one doesn't, they can't do that, can they?
Yeah.
They still can. Okay.
They still can.
Okay.
The parcel numbers are, and mortgages and things like that, that's just stuff that's at the register of deeds office.
Okay.
But a deed of restriction binds those together and makes that a record at the register of deeds office as well.
Is that something that we need to, you know, put in our definitions or something to do that? See, we had two in the last couple of years, which fortunately for us were pretty easy because they were on these two half lots. And one owner bought the other half lot, and you know, got rid of it one first shop. So it was like, okay, just go and combine. And then it really helps out in two ways, because it combines two half lots and we're back to a full. And then it's, you know, built on it. And then it doesn't, then you can build on the lot line. We don't care, you know, too, which was in one case, it was smooth case. So you're what you're talking about, something just a little bit different.
It's just tying those two lots together if you're going to put one structure on.
So do we need to put that in your definition? That's probably the
So is that verification that you're referring to, that would effectively prohibit selling? If you're going to sell it, you're going to sell the whole
complete
package.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I was hoping I understood.
Yeah. You just can't come in and say, if I use my case and I decide to take my lot, okay, well, I'll just build a garage and we'll just pay it for my shop and then I'll just split it off. That would, but I would have to die. There is a legal way where I could tie that without putting the, combining the parcels together. The formal, but that's, so yeah, we just have to define that somehow.
Yeah.
An ownership or, cause we do require that on the building permit that you actually own it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a rental right now that put in the permit, but your owner had to buy out. So this guarantees that too. So okay, cool. All right, so that's one. Let's strike that. That may help on my next one of my own here. Then my next question: do we do we go to 153.216, which is kind of halfway through. It's fences, walls, and hedges. This is probably nitpicky, but our current ordinance says you cannot have a hedge, fence, or wall in any front yard over 2.5 feet in height, and it's basically the standard building fence now is 3 foot tall. I just changed it.
Question. Does that consider retaining wall too?
Fences.
No, retaining wall, that's the whole property from erosion.
Yeah. I think retaining wall is something that's more constructional.
But it doesn't say walls, fences, walls, and hedges.
Okay, I see the wall issue. Gotcha.
I'm just saying because there's somebody around here that's a retaining wall and so their yard doesn't slide on their building.
Right.
I don't want them to run into the fact that they can't put that retaining wall there.
No, if we need to put decorative fences or something or just not, because the intent of this is for things growing out of the ground. That probably didn't really exist back in the day when some of this was written.
These are built cinder block walls.
So no.
Well, plus that also.
Yes, sir.
You start talking like the walls and say like fences. I thought at one time that you couldn't build within what 10 feet or something like that of your property line. So therefore, like over where I'm at, if I put up a wall or a fence or
fences are allowed on the. Up to the property.
Up to the, even though they will, you can't see, like on my property, I can't see coming around.
You still have to go by your corner because you're on a corner.
Then
so you're going to have two, you're going to have to worry about it
on two sides. For one.
Like where I'm at, I only have to worry about it, you know.
Right.
I don't have to worry about my front on the side.
First of all, you'd be on two sides, so you'd be 3 foot. And then two, there is a sight line ordinance for intersections that you would have to meet as well.
Yeah, that's what I saw. You got to
so, which overrides the... A building. Buildings. Not fences.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When I put my fence in, that was straight in my... Because wasn't it that was what got massed
up in the
TV? Yeah.
Well, he wanted a 6 foot privacy fence up to it. Once it was checked by both the city and the police department, it restricts the vision and did not meet The other portion here is actually the paragraph right before that for visibility at intersection.
Right.
So I couldn't put a 6-foot privacy fence on a side lot like that all the way up front. Because it blocks the sight line of the intersection. And that one actually is listed at the feet vision between 2.5 feet and 10 feet above the center line grades. Yeah, we should probably change that one to 3 too. So. That's 1.5.
I think back then the building permit did say we went over that easement. We had to get approval.
Easement's going to be there.
But you went over the property line.
Well, it didn't.
So it was 20 feet.
That's true for buildings. A fence is not considered a building.
Well, but number one, you never measure off the street.
You got to find
the one exception where we have to. You measure from your property line, not the street.
Right. Well,
I know, but we didn't. It's fine.
The city's definition of structure includes fences and setbacks. Maybe something you'd like to address, potentially, because...
At that time, I think that's what I was told, is it's considered a structure. That's what he's saying.
According to the definition, fence is considered structure. And as such would apply... The setback
was fine. That's always been, you could build a fence on the property line.
Right.
But again, like in one of these cases on the corner lots, you have to follow that setback because.
Visibility issues.
Right.
But then technically, it means that if you have an easement
approval. So I'm thinking we need to address that in a separate. Maybe pull fences out of structure and make them their own definition.
You know, we reviewed it and we addressed it by the front and the side yards because a lot of our lots are different in the town. So that they don't meet approval or whatever it was. Did that.
And then we should probably also add a maximum height. 6 feet. Yes.
You said 6?
Yep.
6 feet.
And the other thing that we probably should add, just as our safety and security thing, we need to ensure that there is an access point in that fence. We do have at least one that I know that went up that does not have any access from the outside.
I think there needs to be one.
There should be.
Needs to be discussed, especially under the fire.
Fire codes and stuff like that.
And the other thing is for your, if it's blocking my water meter, they have to go up and read a ban.
So as part of the building permit process, when you submit for a pass, the guys go out, every building permit goes through. That is one of the things that the water guys look for. Can you access it? If you can't, then before the permit is approved, that resident has to put in a remote reader that they can't get to.
So. Is there something maybe on the building permit itself that we have a disclosure of a fence having access?
I think we're going to have to get into that definition when we break it out and say that any fence has to have, exterior.
A closed in, completely.
Yeah, it cannot be 100%. It has to have an access point and
access or egress or whatever. As, even in the case of emergency services, you don't want to take a gurney through the house just to get to the backyard if you don't have any other way to get there.
And we probably could define on that width of that meeting.
Yeah, would be a bad thought.
Yeah, so that you can actually get to it.
And then we have to repair. We pay for repairs?
Most do, but like I said, that's important.
One other thing that I don't know where you would put it in the ordinance, but once a building permit request has been submitted, how do subsequent changes or adjustments get filed? Do they need to submit a new request? Can they come in and amend their original request? And how is that tracked without creating a new mountain of issues?
I don't know if that's the building council of building permits and zoning, but that is a, or is that more just of a local policy on how we execute a building permit? You know, like a resolution or something.
Because we don't really go in.
That's the administrative portion of executing it.
What about putting something like a disclaimer on the bottom of the building permit itself that if any changes to this proposal after approval, it is up to the individual to notify the finance office, to notify the council member.
Even before it gets to the approval process, there are updates because more information is needed. You know, this proposed fence is so many feet from the property line, but it's not on the original application. So how do you clarify that we're getting everything we need? And then document it.
I thought that sounds like more of a policy, because technically we don't.
We don't require a building permit for every fencing.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
We adjusted that.
Well, we adjusted a couple things. One was not everything just limited by the council anymore. That was number one. So number two.
Oh, yeah. Yes,
yeah, so you should always have a permit before you put anything on the ground because it needs to have an 811 already done.
Oh,
and again, so stuff like you said, the water meter, which is an entirely separate chapter of ordinance, the access. So you have to have all those things down, and then so it's the best practice to always do that. But as far as our building permit, it's just kind of evolved as an administrative thing on executing the ordinance. It's not like approved. You know,
we don't have anybody that goes and assesses like. I don't know if when you pull a permit, you have a date of completion and an inspector comes and has to inspect it. You pull a wiring permit, you pull it.
So we don't, in the city, but the way that generally is done is through the insurance company. So all these new houses that are going in, the insurance companies require, building inspections. So then the owner has to manage it. So then they have to go and get somebody to come in and inspect it. A formal one actually found the homeowner. We don't have to wait.
We can
afford doing it, but they have to. But we can. We do have provisions in ours to hire somebody from time to time or do whatever we want. After that, so.
Okay.
And when you're talking like your dad, you're more than new. So.
It's basically dealt with by saying that if you do something other than what is in your approved building permit, you are violating the zoning ordinance. And then you go back through the enforcement steps where you get a letter from the official.
I'm more concerned with the submission of the original application. And en route to approval, more information is gathered and needs to be added to the plan. So you've got it on file that you've addressed all of these bullet points. You know, the structure is only so many feet from the property line and or the original plan never clearly identified.
So one of the things I am doing when I said that I'm working on an example is that I have a much better drawing than what we've been using for to clarify those. So I don't know. I've generally gone with really submit it and tell you guys to check or anything. We got to go through the process. And then but then if you change it after it's approved,
That's the new animal.
Then we're into
a new part.
A violation.
Well, a violation of a practical changing it as well, or having to resubmit a new permit to a doctor. That's why we're getting with them.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the group it's cut in stone. This is the way it's supposed to turn out.
And I think word is slowly getting out to when you want to do something, come get a building permit and then start getting a hold of us.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we're timely so that you don't just go and sit and try to do it by yourself and then turn it in and then well, how come it's taking a while because you know, barely answered any of the questions.
Yeah.
So we're getting okay. We got to keep going. So
can we
this is going to get tabled again anyway. Yeah. So.
Okay.
That's going to get tabled tonight. I'm going to give you two things to think about before we leave, unless not discuss it, before you put it back. My other two more items, accessory uses also in the highway commercial. There's the same thing for storage warehouses and vehicle storage as a prevented accessory use. Is it possible? And that's under 153.123. Item B. In order to kind of rectify this and thinking about the request that went in that kind of drove this, is there a way to go into the highway commercial side? Can you actually then subdivide further down in there and say within this particular property in the city you could do something different? You could do a storage, you could do your thing?
I've researched other towns. And somewhere, I'm positive it used to be in our, they mentioned in other towns, they'll say parking lots, parking garages in highway commercial.
Well, that's not what I'm thinking.
Yes, it is, because that's where it catches in what you want to do. That's where it's getting caught up in that parking lots and parking garages, because it doesn't say.
Actually, you're getting ahead of me because you don't know what I'm thinking about. What I'm thinking is much more, we segregated out Main Street. So we have put that property over that used to be the industrial area. I'm not a fan of it, but it's there. We let Tom Barge come in and build his man cave there. So we have additional lots there. I don't know of any other purpose for that. It's not really even correct to zone it highway commercial, but that's the only thing it fit. Can we take that chunk, and I know Bruce Miller has his storage in it, and say that you could build this accessory building on that, but then just in that area.
So change that. Is it right now? I don't have the zoning in front. Is that zoned highway commercial now?
Yes, we've got it and everything. Yeah. So
okay, I couldn't remember.
But
across the street is industrial.
But yes, but it really doesn't even necessarily strip to that. But again, when all this was going on, you know, that all started with having, you know, the big man cave, right? So there's several lots there yet. Essentially, we're not going to develop that out without the industrial. So would that fit for that? Because that would kind of fit for what Van Orts wanted to do. And then those buildings are large enough that they could essentially become a commercial if they got sold.
Right.
But can you just go into that, you know, taking out that piece? Those, you know, that definition for those and say, okay, this, in this area, you can do this type of, thing.
If you look,
I think the,
and then I wasn't here for the discussion. I'm just going to throw it off because Caitlin needs to leave.
Yeah, sorry. So you still don't want to have an accessory structure that is without a principal use.
Right.
But you can define whatever you want as a principal use.
Well, for my pitch though is I don't want our highway commercial to become a whole bunch of big man caves. Just that particular area where that particular type of accessory building, that vehicle, the larger than a three-stall garage vehicle building could be put there, not out here, which is on the highway. Just within that area. That's a
so you're talking about creating an additional zone.
Yeah, sub zone.
I don't think you can. Highway commercial is highway commercial, though.
No, but highway commercial would not change. It would stay highway commercial.
But you're making an exception in one area of highway commercial.
We designate that, just like we do on Main Street.
No, you're talking.
I don't think you can do that.
It's not a subzoning within highway commercial. Right. It is a different zone.
Okay.
You'd be essentially talking about, you know, you'd have highway commercial that applies everywhere else other than this, and then you'd have
Main
zone.
Okay, then maybe we need to do that because highway commercial was the only thing that fit, but it's not highway commercial proper because it's not on the highway. It can't be commercial because it doesn't fit commercial. And in this case, it was already had two structures on there that didn't need industrial, so it had to be something. So the only thing we have was highway commercial, but if there's another type of category for that.
You really, literally could. You are defining what your zones are. You really could call it man cave zone.
Because it's large enough to do that in your
she
okay.
Know.
Okay, so that's the question to start thinking.
Yeah.
Then my second one.
Yeah, so you forget about them, right?
Okay, and then the second one, because Caitlin's got to leave. Unless somebody else can find it before we come back or over the course, I cannot find anywhere in our ordinances where it would be legal to put up a duplex or townhouses for sale where you could put up a duplex or let's say a four set of like row houses, townhouses, but you could sell each one individually.
Wouldn't that fit under multiple?
Again, this is for research for you guys to come back. The best I could find is that it addresses apartment buildings, which are rental.
Okay.
It has all the property lines around it. It doesn't address like putting up a duplex where it's got a shared wall on a lot line. You know, this one's for sale. This one's because everything here has the setbacks and everything. You couldn't do it.
Okay.
Right.
I can tell you that ours in Sioux Falls. Our town hall, our twin home, it is, I did not know, we are in commercial.
Well, that's fine.
So
that's
something that you might
want to think about. That's not the part that I'm asking about. The part that I'm saying is that within our ordinance, if somebody walked in today and said, I want to put a duplex over there and then four lots, they can't do it. We don't have the ability to approve it because we would not have a setback.
Yeah.
Only if it's a rental unit.
I just bring that up. That's the type of classification they are doing in Sioux Falls for twin homes.
Well, we would do it in the R2 or in R3.
Right.
To do it, we wouldn't do it in, we wouldn't waste commercial. Sioux Falls entirely, they have to, everything's commercial. But here we would do it in like an R3, but then you'd build a shared wall on the property line. This is done all over the place. It's pretty standard, but then you could sell the duplexes and not rent them. And, but like I said, to build it right now, if somebody came in with a building permit and said, I want to build duplexes over on these four lots for sale, because of the setback requirements, you can't do it. Because you won't get your 6 foot between houses.
I think if
they came in and said, well, I want rent, you know, it's a rental unit, well, yeah, fine, we can move on and get that sucker going. But duplexes and townhouses can be sold individually. I mean, we don't have the provisions that I found in here to be able to build a new unit like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the takeaway there.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway.
So housing, that's a rental. So that's different.
Yeah, if you're rent, I mean, you could build townhouses for rent on the same thing. If you said, well, I'm just going to rent them and not sell them, and you'd be the, you know, and you did four townhouses instead of four apartments, that's fine. But if you said, well, I'm going to build four townhouses, but I'm not going to be the landlord, I'm going to sell each one of these townhouses, I think it's a viable option.
It's kind of the wave of the future, too.
Yeah. So, anyway, with that, those remind me, I'll take those away. I know we didn't get to everybody's, but we need to table it so that Caitlin can leave. And the last items here, I think, are all pretty straightforward. So, do you need to table this, please?
Motion to table. Second.
Caitlin's motion to table. Steve, second. If those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. So this is tabled until the next meeting. Do you have ideas or whatever? Let's keep talking at it. we need to go, because we'll need to, if we want to do this, then that means, got about 15 days, we have to publish it. Our next meeting is late October 6th, so that buys us a couple days, which I need to do, so by September 15th to the end of that week. I get to a point so we get it on paper. Okay. Caitlin, do you want to stick around for the, any questions on the budgets? That one should be done by, if not, is anybody? That's the next item, is the 2026 budget needs to be picked up from the table since it was discussed.
I make a motion that we pick it up from the table.
Second.
Okay, so Cheryl made a motion to pick up the 2026 ordinance 623-2026 budget appropriations from the table. Steve seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Okay, motion approved. It's picked up from the table. Go.
You guys had, we had sent out the adjusted or amended appropriation notice from the initial one. So this one, to make sure that you're looking at the right one, the total or the grand total appropriations would be $2,655,230. So that's the one we're looking at. And I had sent along some notes on what was changed. So just as a quick heads up, for the revenue side, we had removed the $32,000 from the RSCG, which is the regional services. Gosh, I can't even remember what it stands for. But it's from the it's the grant provided to the ambulance for the recruiting and stop the bleed and the power cap.
Yeah.
I did remove that from the 2026 because the plan is to do it this year because they're anticipating that the costs on the power cap are going up. So they're trying to get that ordered this year so then you can get that done and taken care of. So that's why I removed that. So then on the expenses side, obviously that was also taken out under the ambulance. Going back to the revenue, Scott had talked before about the recreational trails grant. I added that as a revenue where that was $77,800 for the grant portion. And then again, on the expense side, I included ours. So the total cost of that project is $97,500. So obviously that includes the 20% that the city is responsible. And then a couple other expenses that I did amend. I did add more to the finance office for the audit and annual report line item. I bumped that by $3,000, taking it to $25,000, just because, again, it's the federal audit, so she's kind of spendy. So that was the main reason for that. And then there were just a couple of line items within the ambulance beyond the grant line item that Nikki just wanted to amend. So I, per her request, I did that. But otherwise, if you have any other questions recently, no. And I updated. To approve the first reading of Ordinance 613. As presented, if you so choose to.
And I was doing some research on tax revenue and stuff the last year before I got here. Unfortunately, I don't have, might be sitting on my desk, but I will send that out to everybody. Right now, we're on track to be just a few thousand dollars above last year's sales tax numbers, but not a lot. Yeah, a couple other areas that I found in here. I think that might change
that. Well, and you can track that on the, I think it's the yellow and green sheets, because they are provided as the revenues each month along with the expenses.
The thing that, and this is kind of what we're talking about from a little different perspective. The number one thing that popped out at me looking at it is that Springfield has the highest taxable sales in food, restaurants, and food service in the county. So we're the highest city for that, by quite a chat. So that's a bright spot where we're overdriving everybody, all the other 5 miles is on that. I'd say by about $200,000 or something like that. It was a lot. Nobody else has got restaurants. So it's things like that that are helping us out. So. Anyways, to move on with the first reading then would be a motion to either as presented. I don't think we amended anything here, so and then that's a roll call vote. Then the second reading will be October.
I make a motion to budget ordinance number 623, first reading, as presented.
Yep. So Cheryl's made the motion to approve the first reading of ordinance number 623-2026, budget appropriations as presented. Caitlin has seconded. Any additional questions or comments? Hearing none, finance officer, please take a roll call vote.
Birch.
Peach.
Aye.
Ludens.
Aye.
Mueller.
Aye.
So there are 4 ayes, 0 nays, 0 abstentions, and 0 absent. So that first reading passes. Second reading will be at next regular. It's planned out for the next regular meeting. Okay, so with that, people, if you need to take off, this is probably where we're going to start getting into more generic stuff, but if you have anything. The schedule of fines, we're not going to obviously do any action tonight, but we can continue some quick discussion on that. So that's the next item. Once the fines catch up, we talk about trying to find the understanding piece is in our core set of ordinances when we. When we reformatted the ordinance book, and we had, we did a couple things. One, we looked through some areas and we found places where there was like a fine that was listed, but it was probably incredibly low. And so the advice was, when you take that out, you do what everybody else does, and you just say, as set by resolution or set by the council from time to time, the issue we now know with that, we probably should have done a little more research there, is actually within our chart, it says that fines and penalties have to be set by order. So it cannot be done by a simple resolution like we do.
That's sort of the next one.
Okay, so it can't be done that way. It has to be done by ordinance. So it would be two reading. So that's number one. So there are some hanging. There's some things now that are hanging out that don't have any fines or penalties associated because we did that. Then as a group, we just never tracked and followed up to even address that by resolution. So they're not sitting out there with nothing. So we need to address those. I did the search online today. I found 12. Actually, none of them are probably all that big a deal. But nonetheless, you have to go ahead and set it. And then after that, I found multiple other ways where things are listed in there or where there's language that's says something about it. I sent it the bonus stuff today. Yeah, so here's basically the stuff. We have other language in there that includes heavy fine language, like by fine of not more than, you know, $100. But it doesn't say fine of $100. Or not more than, or I think in one case, not less than, or cannot exceed. So there's like four or five different ways. The bottom line is there is if it says, okay, help me out here. When you say a by fine of not more than $100, it becomes arbitrary. And so you can't do that. There has to be a specific number.
So it has to be like 101, right?
No. If it says not more than $100 in our, it doesn't mean that we need to change it. It just, either, you know, let's say myself or Garrett, you know, wanted to assess a fine because somebody was off doing, well, let's see, the fine I found would have been, well, no building permit. Okay, so no building permit can be fined by no more, by a fine not more than $200. Okay, well, how do...
I see what you're saying.
Well, for you, you were doing, you know, a shed, so we're going to fine you, you know, $25. But, shoot, you're building the whole stinking house over there, so we're going to fine you, you know, you have to say, it has to be an ordinance. It has to be specific. It can't say by, you know, not more than $200 because then you run the issue of, well, how come I got to find this? And, you know, it's gonna be.
Who's doing the assessing of the fine?
Right now, nobody is. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say who does.
That's a good place to start if you're going with that.
But no, we don't need to go that route. Right? Y'all set the fine. We just need to clean that language up so there's no ambiguity in there. If you're doing a building permit for something under $50,000 and you didn't get a building permit, your fine is $50. Period. It's not, you know, it's $50. You just move on. Right.
That is a very good way to go about it. You just have to find another thing. Keep in mind, however, is I've done a little bit of research in the city ordinances, trying to correlate some of those that this page. And that, there are times where a city ordinance may want to fine for the same violation that a state ordinance wants to fine for. For instance, failure to stop. Okay.
Sure.
Throw that out there. If there's this ordinance that says failure to stop, and you want to set the fine at $500, but the county and the state say that's a $32 ticket, the judge would only assess that at $32. Okay. You basically can't fine more than what the state is going to fine for the same violation.
Thanks.
So both sent me the entire state list of fines that came across a couple. So my intent, kind of went sideways, but it's working we're getting back on it. My intent initially when we talked about it, when this came up was, okay, well, then we need to do something so that we can assess fines, so that we have teeth and ordinance, so that our employees can do things. And yes, there are all kinds of ones in here that are, you know, probably outdated or something that are still in there, which we probably left in there. Some of these I know we left in there on purpose when we reformatted it so that we would actually have to come back and deal with them. You know, like the Dan Paul stuff. You know, that kind of port, it's not going to get issued anyway. So, but there are things that are important that we need to deal with, and it's a good way to probably get our feet wet and understand this, like said. So, in issue one, when he said that, in my little bit of time, I was able to look at one of them that we don't address, section 91.999. And every time you see a .999, that's a fee or penalty. That's where that's in the ordinance. So 999 is in the animal one. So 015 is quantity animal, 030 is dog license, and 035 is noncompliance in section 91. They all point to section 91.999 to do that. Well, the violation says for these, which just says to pay normal court costs for first violations. I don't know what those are. So I don't know if it's his thing. So we So essentially that means right now, if somebody doesn't have a dog license, this is my reading, we can't fine them for not having it. So we tell Garrett to go out and he gets a dog and doesn't have a license other than coming in here to pay for one. And if they tell him to go pound sand, well, we can't fine him. Because we don't have, I don't know what the normal court costs are. And then after that, so the second and subsequent violation is $20 plus court costs. So, okay, we're getting to, I guess, the second one. So I looked at, I did a quick search on Vermilion's, and then I think some of this tracks with state, some of it doesn't. Like Vermilion's fine for an unlicensed dog, or lack of dog, I think it's 23-21. Lack of a dog license is $56.50. And a dog at large is $164, and it says it's set by the court. Right, so those are all things. Either the state one says you can do it, or you can, you know, just piggyback on another town in order to do that. We have some other things in there about impounding. I mean, that stuff is in there. It's probably ridiculously low, but nonetheless, we're going to do it. But there is a fine that's listed. It's just these things. Fireworks is another one. Fireworks says, and firearms discharge is actually, has a not less than term in there, not less than $100. Well, again, so somebody's shooting fireworks off when they're not supposed to, you know, the police department got to figure out, we need to tell them this is how much it should be, right? So, so there are the five.
What about golf cards?
I'm sorry.
Golf cards.
What about golf cards?
Okay. Yeah, thanks. So the six things that I pulled out that are probably what I would say are short-term or immediate things to get fixed and to do this, because we can't address, and we're trying to do zoning, we can't do this whole thing. The no building permits and zoning compliance, which does say up to $200, so there's room there that we can do in there. So we have that. 90.999 is common nuisances that are things like litter, refuse, dead animals, blowing grass onto the street, all those kind of normal things. That one doesn't have any kind really of that, or they continually, or they refer back to section 10.99, which is, could be a misdemeanor, 30 days in jail or up to $500 fine. So again, that's not set. 90.999, again, has no reference or penalty for a violation of 0.048, which is the enforcement to repair, demo, remove, vacate order, essentially, you know, our public nuisance order. So a schedule needs to be set for that. That one can go up to the full $500 if we choose, but that would need a couple of... It needs to have a number and probably that a little more extensive, you know, first or, you know, per day or some, you know, thing in there that, so it's not just a one-time thing and doesn't get done. The dog stuff, quantity animal permit, the fireworks, which is a pretty standard complaint. And then my number six is golf carts. So there are no specific violations listed in 72.99, which Chapter 72 is golf cart. But, and this is, I guess, Bo's work and maybe some Garrett's. Most of the stuff that's listed in there look like regular traffic violations. You know, the one that I really don't know about, because, you know, underage drivers, all that stuff is regular, so he makes a stop and he got a driver's license. My intake is the state allows us to do this, but it's just like a motor vehicle. But the one that really catches me though is, no registration, no sticker, essentially an unlicensed vehicle. Is that different? Do we need to set that by ordinance or does the state law for being an unlicensed vehicle cover us? And the reason I ask is because state law says if the municipality chooses to do this, you do the licensing rather than a side by side where you go to the courthouse to get a regular. And my recommendation would be to just set it, you know, the same as with clients if you don't, but right now I don't know that we can fine anybody for not having registered their car. I think everything else is just a traffic violation that can be addressed. And I think and enforcement's a little different story, but now that we got back to having a patrol officer, that is something that will be a little more of an emphasis, particularly next year. But we'd like to, I would like to make sure that we clear it up so that he's got the ability to do that. So if that's the case, then it's just go forth and write a traffic ticket. Move on, but and that one specific one is I registered it. Yeah. Why and big law. So those I would like to see addressed over the next couple of months. More of the stuff that is cleanup that we either come back as an individual ordinance and kind of work, or once we get kind of get our feet wet and get this, you know, an understanding of this, we can come back into the park. But we need to, the larger one right now needs to be filled. And if we need to send out that list of state, the state one that you sent out, then, you know, you kind of got to sort of do that so you can see what they are. And there's one piece in there I think I was going to ask you. There's a fine, and then there's another number, which I assume is the fine plus court costs that are being but or do we need to do something? You have the fine. If it's an ordinance, you have the ordinance fine and the duty tag on an administrative fee or such a court cost or you know, the process. I don't know.
That would be what generally the fine would cover. Court will assess court cost if the ticket remains you know, unpaid before it goes through the court system.
Okay. So, how do you say just to start? So, anybody got any discussion on that beyond what I kind of threw out? Just get a little bit going so that we, the big items, the buildings, the dogs. Here's, I didn't put that on the slide. Garrett already has taken over my dog catching duty, so I feel good. We just had to get him some flea medicine so that he can please hold people. But he's on it. And he's meeting people doing it, so.
Cool.
And then he needs to tell us to pick up when he puts the dog in the back seat so he can.
We got him covered.
And don't come in here. Okay. With that, that's my discussion. If anybody's got anything else to add, we'll keep moving on to the next thing. Okay. And hearing none, the next thing is the 2024 annual report. Turn it over to Amanda.
This was also provided to you. We received this, I don't have the smartphone here, but within this last month.
It was provided via email.
Yeah, but yes, it was provided via email, sorry. But it was provided or handed into me in August. It was already printed in the paper, but it does need to be approved or officially approved by the council. I don't know, you want to go through each of the pages? I can certainly try to do that. I did go back and just kind of compare it for myself back to the 2023 annual report. And, I mean, we're on the up and up, so everything looks good there. I will... It was on Exhibit 4, page 5, the very bottom of the page where last year this was kind of a, it was a critique for audit because, like, cash was overspent. And this year it does still have a negative $88,000, and that was kind of my fault in learning, kind of going forward in, like, how expenses are put into each year. So then stuff that's still paid in 26 technically gets moved back to the 25 year, or you know what I mean. So I'm improving. So I did want to just bring that to your attention. So that's on the up and up as well. I don't know if there's any other questions that you guys have. Definitely have to thank Sean Fish and Shane Fish that they are wonderful and incredible to work with. I appreciate them very much.
Any questions for Amanda on the report? It has already been published. So this is the annual report. This is something that didn't quite make it this year, but I know she wants to take on in the future. Annual report, not the audit we dealt with that. Any other questions or comments? Otherwise, we'll need a motion to action that report.
I make a motion to approve the 2024 annual report. Second.
Okay, so Cheryl made the motion to approve the 2024 annual report as presented. Steve seconded. Any other discussion or question? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. So that motion carries. The next item for safety benefits, loss control recommendation.
Okay, those are in your packets. Basically, SBI is the Safety Benefits Incorporation. They are under the umbrella of SCPAA, which is our insurance company, South Dakota Public Insurance Alliance. And if we go through, he came through in June. He came through in June and provided, you know, our audit or survey or what have you, and then came back with some recommendations, which are the ones that are included in the packet. If we get back to them within the 60 days, you know, providing what the council decides to take for each recommendation, what action, then we would qualify for a credit on the yearly insurance. So last year, it was $434.20 what we saved by doing this. So if you look through here, the first one is it's recommended that property owners be notified in writing about the if they need to repair or replace sidewalk. So, and that one, talk to the guys, and have some information to go forward with and like start to, begin that process. So we've got that one going. The other one is recommended your entity establish written personal policies or personnel policies for employees, which we have, but obviously are in the process of updating. So, you know, the target date is, like I said, my goal is the end of the year. Then the next one is certificates of insurance to be requested from outside contractors and subcontractors. Working on this a little bit with Bo back and forth. So, that my intent is to hopefully have that on the October agenda. So, like I said, working on that. There was a priority B, and that was to have a safety manual be developed. But that's the goal for 2026, so heads up. And then Parks and Recreation, they recommended cushioning material of sufficient depth for the fall height of the highest piece of playground equipment. And Don has already added sand to the playground. Then the last one is the swimming pool. Recommended that policy be adopted that prohibits the use of cell phones by lifeguards while on duty because of the potential for distraction, which we did have that in the pool handbook. I did clarify, I updated that, but that's also kind of on track for January, February of 26 to formalize that. So like I said, it's happened internally, but we'll let this place happen after the personnel taken care of. So then the motion would be to approve, table, or deny the recommendations as presented or amended.
I make a motion to approve as recommended.
I'll second that.
Okay, so Cheryl's made the motion to approve the Safety Benefits Incorporated Loss Control Recommendations as presented. Larry seconding. Any other discussion or questions?
How bad does the sidewalk have to be before you start wanting to replace it?
At that point, it's going to be up to the property owner. But the recommendation here is just to notify in writing that the need to repair or replace would be recommended by the city.
All it is a recommendation.
It's not entirely the property owner either. I mean, because there are actually some other actions that would take.
Yeah, because what is it? Come on, Bob.
I think the intent is if you see a sidewalk that could be, that likely is, a trip hazard, that the city might be on notice for, then there's much smaller chance that the city has liability over the property owner who is responsible for those repairs. But there still could be some liability for the city if they are allowed to exist for years and years and years and get worse and worse and worse. So that's the intent. If it's trip hazard, you should notify.
Yeah, because what is it? If I was to replace all of the sidewalk that I feel that needs to be replaced over at my house, it costs me $3,000 to $4,000.
We don't even add it on when we do street projects. We don't even normally add it on. So, but that's not necessarily what the same thing is. You have to replace it so much as if it's broken or something, then you need to remove it. We don't necessarily have to direct them to replace it. You just need to remove it and make it, just grass or something.
Too. Yeah. As I understand it, what we're doing is just making sure that there's a track record that the city is making the property owner aware that something needs to be done. We've done our due diligence.
What I did over at Dad's is where he was coming from the trees, I just took safety orange paint and sprayed the edges and stuff, all that. Hopefully he can see that, but then anybody else can see that it's heaved up and they come and try to mitigate some issue.
But then like my neighbor across the street, when that tree took out all of that stuff, she would be responsible for that, for replacing that sidewalk?
She would not have to replace it. She would have to remediate the areas. She would have to make it smooth. It can't be a hole there.
Okay.
If the sidewalk is gone, we're not directing anybody at this point. We can. The city can, but we're not. This isn't about telling you to put in your sidewalk. This is about you got rusted stuff. Here's liability. But you can take it out and just turn it back to grass,
Okay. Make it more accessible.
Yeah. As long as it's flat, it's no longer a safety hazard.
Because at one time she was talking about seeing if you could get the city to get that one big piece out and just fill the hole with dirt somehow, some way.
Yeah, and those are things that maybe she can request and obviously can buy dirt, but this is about remediating it, not replacing it or forcing it or replacing it, but getting rid of the safety hazard, which can be filled up with dirt, plant grass, and fun, so.
Okay, I'll come
over. Okay. Any other questions or discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That passes. Next item, we have a resignation letter from Kate Rock from the Evelyn Lane Library Board of Trustees, dated August 25th, 2025. Dear Springfield City Council, this letter represents my official notice of resignation from the Evelyn Lane Library Board of Trustees, effective upon your approval. She requests to end her 3-year term 1 year early. There's family items, family concerns. And she graciously is honored to have served. And if the opportunity comes again in the future, she would enjoy and she'll continue in a voluntary role as needed. So there's action to accept that resignation from Kate.
I'll make the motion to accept the resignation of Kate Rock.
A second?
Second.
Okay.
with appreciation for her service. She's not going with me.
All those in favor say aye. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed nay. Okay. Her resignation is accepted with appreciation for her time and her service. On the second portion of that, I have a recommendation for the council to appoint Tammy Brunken to the Library Board of Trustees to replace Kate Brock on her remainder of her term.
Term would be up in 2028.
No. 27. So she has 1 year left on a 3 year term.
Yeah, so it would be 2027.
Yeah,
right.
2027.
So, again, my recommendation is for Tammy Brunken to replace Kate Brock for the remainder of her term for the Library Board of Trustees.
I'll make that motion.
There are seconds?
I'll second.
Any other comments or discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed nay. That passed, so let Tammy know that she's on the library board, effective immediately, and there's a meeting already on the schedule. In front of you that came in, one earlier and one later, I talked about this. Earlier, we have two moving permits. The first one up is for Dan Whalen. He is putting in the house, which is at 1115 6th Street, which is just south of the assisted living. He's going to be moving in a house. This, actually, the basement got poured the other day.
I haven't been in town to look, but I know it was dug in a crash.
Yeah, so I heard a cement, but I want to say yesterday or the day before it was up there. Pouring that. So he is using March Trucking LLC, which is a formal trucking company. We have a letter of certificate of liability from them. He is purchasing the house from Western Housing, which out of Madison. This particular move permits. And he has a building permit and everything. Probably the one thing that we don't have is the map of where they want to move it to or where, what city streets. Because they'll come down State Highway, obviously, to get there, and then we'll have the map. So,
yeah, I do have the email for the guy at Western Housing, and yeah. I can see if I can reach out. But I know from another person who's using the same company at getting a house, the guy at Western Housing told him that because it's an outsourced trucking, they don't have the ability to provide that route plan per se. So I don't know if I need to reach out to Western Housing and see if they have contact information for the trucking company. But other than that, the person that came in today said he did not have a route plan due to Western Housing telling him they could not provide them.
I don't have an issue whether it's a professional company with liability.
Yeah.
They're likely going to go down and probably go down Wood Street, I would.
Well, so in order to get into our city limits, they still have to have a permit for over width and whatever for state highways. So,
yep.
And that's going to be coordinated to a certain extent.
Yeah. So, in the state permit, I understand these companies that are on file for a year, they normally just submit like 2 or 3 days ahead of their move, and then because all this paperwork is done, they just here's the route. So, that would take them all the way through, the state highway. So, include either Walnut.
Yeah.
So I think likely in this case they'll probably go to 6th Street or Wood Street. Take the gravel in behind there. I don't think they would go down the hill and everything, but
yeah.
It's one of those. Either way, we have a certificate of liability and everything, so it's a professional moving company.
Yeah.
I have no concern there.
And besides that, if I remember right, the state would tell them exactly how they would give them the route, because therefore, you know, they've got all kinds of other.
What this does, though, is the state won't tell them once they turn off the state highway. So this is just for our city streets.
Oh, just for our city. Okay.
Yeah. So they would do that. So there's two things since we're starting this again. It's been a while. One would be to obviously approve the permit. The cost is $50. The ordinance does say that the council can waive the $50.
And that's what he's requesting.
And that's what he's requesting. And I certainly support it since he's bringing a new house into town into an empty lot. In fact, both of these and actually more to come yet this fall on all the same case. So, and it's been the tradition of the council. So
can we do approve the moving permit plus waive the fee in one, or do they have to be separate?
Let's do it separately. That way it's clean, and she's got them up there. So.
Okay. I make a motion to approve Waylon's moving permit request.
What about, and then we, the wave is another one?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll second that one.
So Cheryl's made the motion to approve Dan Lincoln's moving permit as requested. Steve was seconded. Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. So the permit is approved. The second item for action then is a motion or action to waive the $50 moving permit.
I make a motion to waive the $50 moving permit for Waylon. Second.
So the motion is to waive the $50 moving permit for Dan Waylon. The motion is to approve waiving the $50 moving permit for Dan Waylon, seconded by Steve. Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. So that passes, so he will get his permit get a 50. So the next one is Steve Boyle. Steve is moving a house that is currently outside of Avon. He purchased the Balveen property, or is in the process of purchasing the Balveen property. We have been working with him on his building permit. So that's just the block down the street here. And he is looking at moving that. I should back up for a second because Dan has on here a move date of September 25th.
Right.
So his is coming up. And then as far as Boyle's, he's a little bit further out, so he's looking at the end of October. He does not have a building permit yet pending the finalization of the deed paperwork, but he's got a pretty good one that we've already worked. So this is a good house. He sent me pictures with Larry, so if anybody would like to see it, it's not a rustic old farmhouse with visions of restoration. It's a legit house to move in, and he'll add a garage onto it and match it up to the existing approach that's there. So it'll be a nice change on that corner. So
should we make the motion, approve the moving permit? Something to the stipulation pending.
We were working on, you know, the whole there's sale and stuff in here is that the building permit and the moving permit are two different things.
Okay.
You actually don't need, you know, to have a building permit to move something across the streets.
Okay.
But the permit obviously only goes to that location. So if the sale doesn't go through or something happens, the permit. You
know, that's okay.
And that was one other thing too that probably could put on there and discuss. And I guess we didn't do it with Dan's. And it's not really in any ordinances to set a time frame on these permits. these move permits, you know, second slip for 6 months or something. We don't really have that. But it does have the specific location of where it's going on this map. And it's on here in the property description where it's linked to, so it can only go to one place anyway. So, or if something happens where it doesn't get done this fall and it waits till the spring, it can only go there anyway. So, and the building permit only happens after he's, you know, got the deed. So, I'm good with that.
Okay.
And he's using Robinson House Moving, and they also have a.
Yeah, I did not receive that. He was going to have them email it over to me.
So
should we put a stipulation on that based on receiving that certificate?
Yeah, I would. And he actually has a map on here. But yeah, I think you just put a stipulation on there that pending, which is a requirement.
Okay. So then I make a motion to approve the moving permit for Boyle based upon receiving, or however to word it.
Contingent.
Yes. There you go.
Liability receipts.
Yes.
Very good. Read my mind.
I'll second that. Any other discussion on that one? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. And then the last thing is also requested to waive the moving permit, or the moving fee, I'm sorry. So, is there action on that as well?
I make a motion to waive the moving permit fee.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That motion. Hey, one last item, and then we do have executive. We got about three more things. We got about four more things here. So, but these are all lumped together, so let's stand track. First item is to approve surplus of office chairs.
Yes, that's the green page in your packet.
We're sitting right there.
Yeah.
It just didn't get done, so let's do it.
Yeah. That's
one black chair and 7 gray chairs.
I make a motion that we you need a motion for to put up on surplus first.
Yeah, to surplus them.
To surplus the office chairs.
Is there a second, please?
I'll second that.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. That passes, so those particular chairs are surplus. The next item is the Board of Appraisers for the office furniture. We probably did this backwards. Okay. Well, the Board of Appraisers, Gloria Owens, Joanne Tucker, and then Leonard McGee for that office furniture. So
I make a motion that we appoint the Board of Appraisers for the office furniture. Gloria Owens, Joanne Tucker, and Leonard McGee.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, nay. But they will appraise those. We'll get that out as far as the next step. The ball lights were
surplus
last month, but we need the Board of Appraisers. So you can check here.
Yep.
Okay. So Wade Adler, Marshall Inram, and Travis Stockholm are recommended for the Board of Appraisers for the ball lights, and I'd like to appoint them to do that. Is there action, please?
I'll make that motion to appoint Wade Adler, Marshall Inram, and Travis Stockholm to the.
Okay. There a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. I'm glad you can get involved with that. Okay, that takes care of that. Okay, we have executive session for three items, personnel, legal, and public safety. discussion. So is there...
I make a motion that we go to the executive session.
Time is 9:24. So we are in executive session. We'll run down the hallway.